All right, the intro never gets old. We're back. Another Wednesday, Lions Collective, Jeff Iafredo. We got Justin Rogers, Colton Pouncey, Will Birchfield back to discuss joint practice today, which you guys were all there. I'll say this. Accountability. The show's all about accountability. This was on me today. All right. I don't know what's going on with the phone here. Shout out to T-Mobile. They screwed me royally. I don't know. I was trying to get a call to the stream.
We just lost a sponsor
on time, but now we're going to be great.
AT&T is picking us up. We good.
Everyone's saying I'm counting my chest hairs. You know, my alarm didn't go off. Man, I'm being cooked in the comment section.
Yeah.
It's all good.
That was a very Dolphins-like intro for us.
Yeah. Now, that's a conf. That's a fair comp based on what happened today. It was utter domination from all the reporting. You guys were in attendance. I was on Twitter or X checking it all out. And it feels like it's the outcome we probably should have expected. But the fact that it happened the way it did, you can't help but praise how the Lions handled business today on offense and defense.
I've covered a lot of joint practices and I mean, I've seen one side dominate the other side of the ball, but you know, never both kind of the way the Lions did today. And I focused my attention on defense. I know Colton was over there with me. Will was handling the Lions offense today, but it was lopsided in pretty much all regards.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Colton.
Okay. Yeah. I would agree with that, Justin. I mean, we were watching them the entire day and you kept waiting for the Dolphins to make some plays. And, you know, granted, you know, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle were a little bit limited in that situation, but I still think the Dolphins offense has enough playmakers to at least, you know, get to the second level of the defense. And they weren't really doing that with regularity, I would say, on a day like that. So, there's a red zone period where I think they scored one touchdown in the final play. It was the second unit. The team appears they're stifling the offense. So, you know, I think you were kind of holding back expectations a little bit when you're watching them go against the Lions offense in practice for, you know, 2 weeks. But when you see them out there against another team and they're still playing at that level, I think it gives you some confidence in this group going forward. And they look confident. They look confident on the field themselves. Like these guys are walking around with swagger. They're not celebrating after making a play. They're getting back to the huddle, trying to line up and do it all again. It was business as usual for this group.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe what happened on the other field is to just take the first play of essentially each period of practice. The first play of Lions offense versus Dolphins defense one-on-ones was a 40-yard touchdown from Goff to St. Brown, where St. Brown just cooked Jack Jones, which was a preview of a really long day for Jack Jones. The first play of 11-on-11 team drills was an explosive run to the left for Jahmyr Gibbs. The first play of red zone team drills was a 20-yard touchdown on a rifle of a throw between double coverage from Goff to Jamo. And it just felt like every single time the Lions' first team offense, anyways, lined up against the Dolphins' first team defense, it was a mismatch. And most notably to me, up front, I think it's been a little bit jarring to watch the Lions offensive line struggled to find its footing through the first three and a half weeks of camp, albeit while missing some key pieces. The unit today was the unit they expect to have entering the season. And that unit was dominant from pretty much the first snap of team drills to the very last.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the Tyreek Hill thing really quick. You know, it matters, right? Like you had a trickle down effect. Jalen Waddle wasn't doing a ton, but you know, I think back to when the Lions have been without Amon-Ra, they continue to thrive. And it's not like the Lions weren't missing defensive players. You know, no Kirby Joseph today, no Terrion Arnold, and still no Aleem McNeil, however you want to factor that in the equation, or Levi Onwuzurike. So, you know, both teams were down some pieces. And yes, it mattered that Tyreek Hill wasn't there, but not in the how lopsided it was.
Can I bring this up? Because I've said this, before, and I understand, especially because, I mean, you guys understand how fans work in general. And I want to make sure I start by saying that Jameson Williams deserves every ounce of hype he's gotten this offseason, rightfully so. But the thing where they lose me is when people forget how good Amon-Ra St. Brown is.
Yeah.
And it's like you can have – both can be true, right? Like Jameson can take a step forward – And Amon-Ra St. Brown is still a two-time All-Pro wide receiver, probably a top-five wide receiver in the National Football League. And I think for me, I'll speak for myself, when I hear, hey, Jeff, Jameson's going to lead the team in receiving yards. Love the optimism. I really do. But then when I go to training camp, you guys have been there every day, and then I see things like today where it's like I think Al Karsten put out, and he probably had 250 yards out there. I'm sitting there going, yeah, I mean, do we forget how good this is? And don't forget Jared Goff is the type of quarterback where, and this is most quarterbacks actually, he needs to trust you. And Amon-Ra St. Brown, there was no doubt with his hands, their connection they've had over the last couple of years, that is not going anywhere. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown's a chain mover. So as much as I love the J-Mo optimism, he deserves it. You know, he's going to have a big year. I think today was just symbolic of like, don't forget about 14, because there's not a single DB that can guard that man.
Who's wide receiver one? You can believe that J-Mo's going to outgain St. Brown all you want. If you brought that to St. Brown, he would say, bullshit he is. Bullshit he is. St. Brown on the field that I watched today was the best player, and it was not close. And I'll go back to one-on-ones. The first route he runs, he torches Jones down the sideline. He caught that touchdown with probably 5 to 7 yards of separation between he and Jones, just on a simple go ball down the sideline. His second one-on-one rep, he makes an insane over-the-shoulder catch on a perfectly timed throw, to your point, Jeff, by Jared Goff. On his third 1v1 rep, again against Jones. Poor Jones, man. It was just a long day for him. He put him on skates at the line of scrimmage with as clean of a release as I've seen in my 4 years watching Amon-Ra St. Brown. And then just for good measure, got Jones one more time to finish 1v1s. And look, it's pretty easy for receivers to generally dominate 1v1s. You go to team drills and St. Brown is open on every single route he ran. And he made the catch of training camp, maybe the catch of his career, if we include all exhibition games and all camps and all practices, in the red zone on a fade ball from Goff. This one against the rookie corner Marshall, a fifth round pick, where he really didn't have much separation. They ran the play from the 8-yard line. And as the ball's in the air and Marshall is on his hip, you're wondering, how is St. Brown going to catch this? Well, he caught it by pinning the ball with one hand to the back of Marshall's helmet while also toe tapping the sideline. And St. Brown has made so many catches now that he rarely celebrates a singular one. After that catch, which came after dominating the Dolphins for about an hour and a half straight, he punted the ball into the air. His teammates went nuts, including Penei Sewell, who came over like it was the greatest thing he had ever seen. And I agree, Jeff, today was representative of who is the best weapon for this team on offense.
Probably pretty glad you got that guy under contract last year, because the price tag would only be going up. You know, I was just checking it out, $30 million per year for St. Brown. You got guys like DK Metcalf making more. Like, I've said this before, and, you know, if there's a hole in Amon-Ra's game, it's the deep ball. Wasn't today, you know, but he doesn't have a track record of consistently getting over on those. But every single other little thing a receiver can do, he just does it to a level of mastery for every ounce of skill and talent he has in his body. He gets everything out of it, and it's every day. And I always think back to what Dan Campbell said last year is, we sometimes just have to forget not to take this guy for granted, because he's just so freaking reliable. And, you know, right, J-Mo deserves all the hype. He does. But, you know, what do we see from him today? We see some drop passes. And I still think the one area where I'd like to see Jameson Williams grow, he has this knack for letting mistakes beat him twice. You know, that's what you always talk about with football players, particularly cornerbacks, but wide receivers too. Don't let the mistake linger. You have to move to the next play. And it always seems like it snowballs with Jameson. He drops one pass, then he drops another, and then he has maybe a bad practice and stacks on another bad practice. And it works in a positive sense too. You know, he builds on good things over and over and over, but he still has trouble, it seems, letting go of when he has the setbacks, the snafus. And you know, that's why I think, you know, there's no hole mentally in St. Brown's game more than anything.
And there's a lot of talk about, you know, is JMO going to have more receiving yards than Saint? Like, what's the timeshare going to be there? And I get it because we're all hyping up JMO in camp and everyone loves JMO. But yeah, I mean, Saint, when you watch him in these practices, days like this really confirm that he's the bona fide number one option on this team. And, you know, something else I would say is that when you have a new offensive coordinator in place and, you know, you're still trying to put the offense and install that in these practices, I think early on in the season, there could be some growing pains as they kind of figure things out and adjust to each other. And I think when that happens, you might see Goff just lean on Saint even more just to keep the chains moving if there are some early struggles. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about that. I still see Saint being the number one guy. Even when Justin and I were on the other side of the field watching the defense, you would just look over to your left or, you know, hear the crowd roaring, and then you see Saint just punting the ball or, like, you know, running free in the end zone. The Lions actually tweeted out, like, just a complete highlight reel of Saints catches today, and I'm pretty sure it was about 12 minutes long. So that gives you an idea of how things were today. You know, that he had a great day, man. It was really cool to see.
After the one-handed pin to the back of the helmet catch on the very next play, which was then run from the six-yard line, he ran another super crisp route to the front pylon, and Goff hit him in stride, and it was like he was already bored with himself for his previous touchdown, so he just went up and posted another. And, you know, St. Brown was pretty honest after practice. I think he admitted to what all of us have observed in camp, which is that the defense has been painfully at times ahead of the offense, and he called it the elephant in the room, kind of this unspoken understanding that the offense has had, as he said himself, struggle so far in camp. And he also said, you know, that's normal as you're breaking in a new coordinator and also a lot of new coaches on that offensive staff between Choice and Montgomery moving from RBs to receivers and with two new starters up front. But he said, you know, today they just wanted to get back to playing Lions football on offense, which is clean football. And by that he means like no mental errors, no missed assignments, no penalties. And then This comes from Ben Johnson. As much as this fan base loves to undermine Ben Johnson, he instilled a lot of really good principles in this offense, one of them being an extremely high regard for details. And so St. Brown was talking about their commitment today to things like their alignments, their splits, the depth of their routes. And every time the receivers especially ran routes, they just did so precisely. And you know, the very first play on the last situational period, which was with 54 seconds left, Lions own 30, tie game, two timeouts, St. Brown runs another sweet route down the seam that Goff places in front of the linebackers or behind the linebackers and in front of the DBs for a 25-yard gain. And that drive was destined for the end zone before the coaches called it off after a late holding call four or five plays later. But the detail and execution returned in flying colors to the Lions offense today.
I thought something that stood out, you bring up the details and the execution. You know, that was something I thought popped up when I went back and watched the Falcons game and watched the film. You see kind of the precision with the pick plays throughout that contest, including on both touchdowns. And, you know, those are all timing. You know, when you get the two routes or the three routes working in conjunction together and making sure you're kind of getting those rubs to create extra separation for your receivers, like that's I'm gonna credit the OC and the wide receiver coach for being on their P's and Q's and getting those guys to deliver that precision. And so you know, these last whatever 5, 6, 7 days have been really good, I think, for just kind of maybe turning some perceptions on the offense around and John Morton around after maybe some early struggles.
Yeah. I think the joint practices are they're the best to evaluate these type of things. I think, I mean, the defense, these offense and defense, they face each other all the time in practice. So it's already one thing. They're very familiar with each other. I think Dan's actually talked about this before, how, you know, you could play starters in preseason, a joint practice, you can at least set up situational different things, red zone situations, and you can kind of move it however you want to move it rather than playing. I think Mahomes came in for the Chiefs on like one play, threw a touchdown and left. It's like, what did the dude learn in that one play? Essentially, these situations are very beneficial. And I think the offense today, now, I mean, Will, you talk about you watch the offense. I've seen at least positive things. Jared Goff seemed like he was protected today because every time I've been out there, and you guys can definitely speak on this, The O-line's kind of been still gelling. Decker's back in the mix. Yeah. And today it seemed like he was pretty clean, zipping the ball around.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that for the first 3 weeks of camp, the only returning starter in his regular spot was Penei playing right tackle. I mean, you had, as Decker said today, a Rolodex of guys at left tackle while they waited for him to return. You had Graham shifting from guard to center, obviously, and then two newcomers in Mahogany and Ratledge. So today was the first time we saw this starting unit playing in tandem consistently. And to your question, Jeff, about the protection for Goff, this was how one series of plays went for the Lions today, which started at the 50-yard line, first-team offense versus first-team defense. Goff to Laporta, first down. Goff to St. Brown, first down. Goff double pump down left sideline to Khalif Raymond, first down. Goff to Khalif Raymond down right sideline, perfectly lofted ball, first down. Goff to St. Brown, first down, end of period. Both coaches had seen enough. And on five of those dropbacks, he had a clean pocket. He was pressured on just one and made, again, that brilliant throw down the right sideline to Raymond. But the offensive line in pass pro was really, really good today. And then I caught Jahmyr Gibbs walking off the field and was just curious about his perspective on the offensive line today, because he has seen this unit at its very best over his first two seasons here. And he acknowledged there have been some ups and downs for the entire offense to start camp. But I asked him, did today feel more like running behind the offensive line of the past 2 years? And Gibbs, as you guys know, doesn't say much, but he smiled and goes, oh yeah, easy running. All I got to do is run straight. And when all Jahmyr Gibbs has to do is run straight, big, bad things are going to happen. And let's not get too carried away against a Dolphins defense that might not be all that good. But this today was the offensive line at its best. And as Decker said, the two things that stood out to him were communication and physicality. Do you know where you need to be? And when you get there, do you play with enough physicality to finish? And both of those things were true across the board for what felt like the first time over the course of a full practice today.
That communication part of that is really important to me, I think, when you hear them talk about that, because they just haven't been able to have many reps together as one unit, just because Taylor's been out and they're shifting guys back and forth, at least early in practice. So hearing that, I think, is what you want to hear as a Lions fan. And, you know, one thing I would say, I didn't watch the offense in totality, but they ran a late game situational drill at the end of practice. And I think it was, you know, 10-10 game, end of the first half, less than a minute to go, ball in the 30. And one thing I saw during the Lions offense versus the Miami defense is Tate Ratledge. It was a drop back for Jared Goff. He was looking for Shane Telstra. And there's a moment where you see Tate kind of pick up someone else, beats his own man, and then goes to help out someone else to give Goff like an extra second or second and a half. I thought that was so important to see from a young player like that, who can recognize, okay, I did my job here. Let me go and help someone else out so we can give my quarterback as much time as he needs to survey the field and throw the ball and get it to a playmaker. And that went for a first down. You keep the chains moving, and they were able to kind of keep going with that drive. So again, just little flashes like that from the offensive line after, you know, some struggles, like, let's be honest, the first couple weeks of camp without the full unit, seeing them out there in flashes like that, I think gave you some confidence for this group going forward, especially a young player like Tate, who, you know, by all accounts, I heard he was kind of moving people today. And you know, it sounds like the running backs were getting 5-6 yards of carry out there from what I've heard from other people. So that's what you want to see. That's what you want to hear. And it seems like they did their job today.
You know who didn't have a the Miami Dolphins offensive line had their fair share of problems against that Lions defensive line. Somebody else had to deal with them today. And I mean, Hutchinson had 2 sacks and 3 plays. And I don't know, Colton, I lost track of the holding calls. I mean, it was outlandish at some point. It felt like there was like 7 or 8. So, I mean, those are as good as a sack and better than a tackle for loss. And so on top of that, you know, the blitz game, I think, is something that's really intrigued me. That's where I think the offensive line, Detroit's offensive line, has the most problems with their defenses. They've done a great job of not only bringing pressure, but disguising pressure. We saw it in the Atlanta game where they were doing a little bit of that, what do you want to call it, amoeba formation, right? Guys all kind of standing up and moving around. And that's a new little wrinkle twist that Shepard has brought to the mix. And I kind of wanted to see how that would affect what Miami was able to pick up and protect. And look, their offensive line isn't very good. Their tackles certainly aren't very good now that, that Armstead's retired, and they've got one out with an injury, maybe two out of their top three out with injuries. But the Lions gave them, the defensive line gave them all kinds of fits, and the blitzes worked.
It was a tough day for those boys out there in Miami, I'll say that. I mean, there was like a three-play sequence where, you know, Hutch had two sacks in three plays, and you're just like, call it. Like, they're done. You don't need to see anymore. This is bad. It's getting ugly out here. But, yeah, I mean, I thought both Hutch and Davenport had really good days. Davenport had a really nice pressure up the middle on maybe the last throw in that situational period for the Miami offense. I talked to Taylor Decker about those two last week, and he said there's some werewolves out there. Those guys, Davenport and Hutch, the fact that, and we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, but they've been destroying plays against the second and third string tackles that the Lions put out there for Decker. But then you see them out here, and they're doing the same thing. And it's just like, all right, this tandem could be really good this year. And it was really never a question of talent with Davenport. It's always been, can he stay healthy? So, yeah, that's always going to be the caveat, and you don't know until the season plays out. But the Lions are really confident in this group, in this duo, specifically Hutch and Davenport. You know, I know Brad tends to take his chances on injured players. Fan base doesn't always like that. But if this one works out in a way where you can get 10-plus games out of him maybe and other guys step up if he has to miss some time, it's going to be a really good defense as a whole, because those guys are collapsing pockets. They're creating pressure. They're getting quarterbacks to force the ball out earlier than they wanted to throw it. And you see that in situations like this. So I'm really high in this group. You know, Davenport, I think you feel for him because he's been through so many injuries. But a guy like Tim Patrick has also been injured in his career and was able to play, you know, most all the season last year. So it can happen. You know, that's the best thing I can say about that. But while you see them out here right now, those guys are just eaten. You know, it's as simple as that.
Super quick, put a bow on this because we're doing a disservice if we don't let them know, Colton. Defensive stats today, red zone. I'm going just first team because that's what matters. Defensive stats, red zone, 9 plays, 0 touchdowns in the red zone for the Dolphins. Then they ran 2 quote unquote drives, right? Could not get a first down. 1 3-and-out, 1 4-and-out, including the double sack drive for Hutchinson. Then we go to the 2-minute drill, 4-and-out with Davenport having that pressure that Colton mentioned. So, I mean, it was a dominant, just absolutely dominant performance. It's not like Miami got 0 plays. A-Chain got out for a few of them, but in all those full team segments, all those you know, specific things that they were working on, Troy ruled the day, and they did it like they expected to do it. And I think that was maybe one of the most impressive aspects of it.
Yeah, it's not hard to see the vision for Davenport and Hutch as a dominant edge rushing duo. And I don't want to belabor this too much because it does ultimately hinge on Davenport being able to play in games. But when you talk with Hutch, he says that Davenport is one of the favorite edge rushers he's ever played with on the other side of the defensive line, because Davenport does exactly what Aiden needs a complementary rusher to do. He can set an edge with the best of them, and then he can collapse a pocket with as violent and powerful as a bull rush as a lot of offensive linemen have ever seen. And as long as he can hem a quarterback in on the side opposite Hutch, Hutch is going to get home and he's going to get his. And we saw it even in a snippet last year in that Rams game where the two of them racked up all kinds of pressures on Stafford, and eventually Hutch got home for a really key sack late in that game. And if those two, along with the big boys in the middle, can harry quarterbacks and force them into hurried and ill-advised passes, there are all kinds of playmakers in this secondary to reap those rewards. So, you know, you hesitate to call Davenport the X factor of this defense, because that's putting a lot of weight on a guy who has played 6 games in the past 2 years. But, man, if he can stay out there, you see exactly how dominant this group can be.
Will just hit his pass rushing thesaurus there. Hemmed and harried. I mean, he just got to the H's. I can't wait to hear the J's.
Rifling through that thing.
Yeah, well, I see a comment here from Robo35 in the chat. I think it relates to kind of this Davenport conversation, because we're never going to hear the end of it. But Robo says, so what I'm hearing is Brad is not going to be in a rush to pay Za'Darius what he wants.
Let me hit on this one a little bit, because yep. – You know, I think I got a little bit of a good grasp on it, you know, so Za'Darius was owed $11 million on his contract, and the Lions balked at that, and understandably so at his age. You know, kind of has become one and a quarter dimensional. The run game stopping isn't quite there. And so they're like, we're not going to pay you $11 million. If you want to stay, we'll give you $5 million. And he's like, nah. You know, he wanted to test what he was worth. And, you know, whether he got offered more than $5 million, you know, he's made it pretty clear he wants to be in Detroit. But when he didn't take it, Detroit turned around and put that money into Davenport and Al-Quadin Muhammad. Muhammad might have been back regardless, but you were able to spend what you were going to give Smith and get two guys, and two guys that fit this system really, really well. Well, you know, now, you know, if he wants to be here, he's got to take less than Davenport. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. That's your starter. That's the guy you expect to play more snaps, to be the guy out there first in every series. And Smith's going to be more of a pass rushing expert. And it's not to say it won't happen, but I think there was intent in the Matthew Judon stuff that was floated out there a couple weeks ago through colleague Dave Burkett. I think it was more of a pressure to let Za'Darius Smith know, yeah, we'll bring you back if you want to, even if you want to sit out training camp like a vet, you know, we'll bring you back. But this is what we're going to pay you, and this is what the role will be. And if you're willing to accept that, come on back, open arms. But if not, we'll find another guy, or we'll roll with what we have, whether it's Hassanin or Nate Lynn or whatever. We only need 15, 20 snaps. You know, maybe the math changes if Davenport gets hurt, but I think the math is what the math is, as long as those guys are healthy.
Yeah. You know, when I think about the Darius conversation, obviously trading for him was such a necessary move at the deadline last year with how thin they were at that position. And you lose Hutch, you lose Davenport. You know, you're trying to win a Super Bowl, just like put a Band-Aid on it, get a guy like Za'Darius, who I think was probably at the top of their list when they're shopping around for guys. And the fact that they were able to land him, and the fact that he was able to produce in the pass rush department, you know, he helped them down the stretch there. Now, his game is not a perfect style for his defense. I think we can all see that. He does tend to, you know, go for his own numbers, you know, get the sack. You know, he kind of plays out of structure a little bit at times. I think that's something we can all agree on. But when you look at Davenport, he's like the prototype for what they want for this defense. You ask Brad, what do you want out of an edge? He says, a guy that can set an edge and win a rush. Davenport has always been able to do that. Again, it's the injury stuff that you're worried about. And I get why people are skeptical. You know, we asked Brad a bunch of questions about it during the draft. Like, why didn't you get an edge earlier? What was the deal here? He essentially said, I tried, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, but you know, we're going to make it work. And I think that's their mindset. And like, if Davenport's able to give you some games, I think you feel pretty good. But I also think, you know, Al-Quadin Muhammad, he gave him some stuff down the stretch last year, too. Yeah. And he looked really good in that preseason game. I think he can be a nice rotational piece. Josh Pascal, it seems like they like him more on the inside, the interior, than on the edge. But, you know, he can help you out a little bit there. And I think the name that we're kind of forgetting is Derek Barnes in terms of a pass rush producer. Because, you know, I thought he played really well in the two or three games they played last year before he got hurt. That Sam linebacker position is kind of built to either rush the passer or drop into coverage on a given play. And I think that's such a valuable, you know, weapon for this defense, for Kelvin Shepard to be able to deploy at any time. And, you know, you talk about the pressure stuff that he's dialing up. I think Barnes can be a really, really key part of that. And I think we don't talk about him enough, quite frankly. So there are ways to manufacture a pass rush. Obviously, Za'Darius is a huge name and everyone wants to be back. You know, Brad didn't exactly rule it out when he talked on 97.1 earlier this summer. But at the same time, you know, I really think that Davenport is the guy. And, you know, they're kind of talking about him like he's going to be a big part of this team. And at this point, I just kind of have to respect that.
Yeah.
I don't love Derek Barnes as much as Colton does in that regard. And I think it's probably a twofold conversation. I don't think Barnes has much to offer on the edge. But what we've noticed, he's playing more off the ball. And that means he's rushing more off the ball. And he's picking his lanes more like a running back. And it does seem like there might be something there. And so, you know, maybe he finds, you know, like you're talking about interior pressure, right? Like you find more or better use of a skill set. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe Barnes is going to be unlocked, if you will, rushing from off the ball and marrying kind of his two football lives.
Yeah. The only thing I'll add on the Za'Darius conversation is that the Lions do sound very open to the idea of him joining this team without participating in training camp at all, if that's what it comes to. I mean, Brad said as much between the lines when he brought up the idea of continuing conversations, even while Za'Darius would have to miss in training camp. And I think if that's what it comes to be, that's actually beneficial to both sides. I think that Za'Darius, after playing in 17 games last year, ran out of some fuel down the stretch. And for a guy who would be entering year 10 at age 33, and for a team that wants to be playing its best football in November, December, January, I think there could be a rather natural match, even if it has to happen at some point within the season. You know, I think the Lions look at Za'Darius and would rather have him peaking later in the year than using up some of those miles in September and October. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility of even an in-season reunion if that's what it comes down to.
Do we know Za'Darius' relationship status right now?
Yeah, I was counting on you.
I thought they broke up. I thought they broke up. He posted single on Instagram, and then the very next day, I think Cashdall said, "I love my man." So I don't know if she has another man or if they got
it sounds like that's a new man. Then we were just posting this a couple of days ago, Cole. I'm like, is he more or less likely to sign here now that he's had his heart broken by Cashdall? You know, maybe
he wants to win a Super Bowl inner city. Is that
right? Yeah. Or is he so distraught he can't even bring himself to be in a place that reminds him of her? So
everything reminds me of her.
Factors to consider here, fellas.
This is the Disney movie. This is how he wins her back.
Right.
With
right.
a ring.
Yeah. And he proposes after the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah, it just depends, you know, like how petty is Za'Darius at that point? You know, yeah, I don't exactly. hate him, you know?
I think he can be pretty petty if he wanted to be. Yeah.
Can I just say one less quick one thing I think would be really interesting about re-adding Za'Darius is I think he's got some of the best hands for pass rusher. Like he just uses his hands in a way that's they're really active. He wins with his hands, and I talked to him about it with the young players last year and how he said he was mentoring those guys on how to, you know, better shed blocks or keep blockers off him. I think that would be incredibly valuable to Hasanin, you know, as a young player who kind of has advanced skill set almost in the run game. You know, there's a lot of development needed in the pass rush, and we know he's not going to ever learn how to bend as a man that lacks flexibility here. It just doesn't come, no matter how much time you put into the yoga room. So, like, he's going to have to find other ways to win. And I think that would be a really interesting side value to having Za'Darius Smith on his roster, is how he can maybe help Hasanin develop some skill sets on how to win other ways as a pass rusher.
Yeah, especially because Ahmed's shown a lot of great things already. I mean, he's been a big storyline. It kind of comes back to what we actually discussed in the group chat earlier this week, and Will brought up Sam Laporta kind of staying on like underappreciated players. We brought up Amon Ross St. Brown. Like, I would put Sam Laporta into that underappreciated conversation, because it seems like J-Mo, obviously, big storyline, and then Amon Ross has a big day, and then the O-line, and then the offense, the defense, and then people forget. It's like, oh, yeah, you have a top three tight end in the National Football League who, by the way, is healthy again, and he's actually had an amazing camp. And it just feels like, you mean, people are reporting on it, but the fans are like, okay, you know, it's like, yeah, it's Sam Laporta. It's like, no, he's a guy that this year should be in the conversation for, you know, everyone's improving yard wise. Why can't Sam Laporta go out there? I mean, he is an 1,000-yard tight end, but on a team where he has to obviously sacrifice numbers. But that dude can be the Trey McBrides of the world and get paid $20 million for another team. But I think the Lions, he's been great all training camp.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Goff throwing to targets who he trusts. The only player he trusts more than Laporta is St. Brown. I think they have had an instant connection from the moment Laporta showed up here 2 years ago. And when Goff needs a key first down or a key look in the red zone, it's not a mistake that he often – looks Laporta's way, and that's held true in training camp this year. I think the one thing that's worth acknowledging about Laporta's season last year is that once he recovered from that early knee injury and got back to full health, over his final 10-11 games, he produced at the same clip that he did as a rookie when he had that historic season and put up almost 900 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like, if you look at his production over his final 10 games, he was averaging close to 7 targets, close to 5 catches, 50 yards, and accrued 6 touchdowns. You extrapolate that over 17 games, that's an all-pro caliber season, and it's exactly what he did as a rookie. So I think with a full offseason and a healthy body, there's no reason to suspect that LaPorta won't have another dominant year in this offense with a quarterback who trusts him. And to echo Colton's point about turning to players with reliability and with track records under a new OC, LaPorta is another one to look for a hot start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch LaPorta last year, especially early, he just didn't look like himself. And a lot of people were like, you know, what's going on with him? Like, it almost seemed like the Lions were kind of using him as a decoy early in the season just because he wasn't himself. And, you know, as Will mentioned, in the second half of the season, that really changed. When he got healthier, he was running more like himself. You really saw him produce at that pace that he did as a rookie. And I want to say he still finished maybe just outside the top five or six among tight ends in receiving yards. And that's, you know, you look at everyone ahead of him on that list, they're a number one or number two option in their offense. LaPorta last year was a number three option while playing hurt the entire season, essentially. So he got off to a slow start in training camp. Those nagging injuries, sometimes those can carry over into a season. It takes you some time to, you know, kind of find yourself. And, you know, honestly, the course of a season, you know, those injuries continue to pile up. So it's not like you get better from one thing and then you're still hurt from something else. You're dealing with it really from start to finish. But he's kind of like the rubber man. He just doesn't go down. He stays out there. You know, even when the injury report reads like head, shoulders, knees, and toes, he's still out there playing. So that's what I really respect about Sam LaPorta. And by the way, he's going to get paid. Like, you don't have you don't let a tight end who's as good as he is and can help you in so many ways and make these contested catches and be a security blanket for your quarterback, you don't let that guy leave in free agency, because when he does, you're going to miss him. So get ready to pay him $20 million, Brad. That's
crying in TJ Hockenson right now. But it was a different era of the rebuild. That was the right move then. There's a lot of underappreciated guys in this roster. I think that's what happens when it's so star-studded, right? Like, of course, the Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Browns and Penei Sewells of the world are going to dominate your headlines. But I look to the cornerback room, right? And we're all understandably excited about Terrion Arnold. That's a first-round draft pick. He is, currently out, still jawing, but, you know, dealing with that hamstring strain. But, you know, it looks like it's going to be a really, really great year for him. But, man, DJ Reed is a great addition. And I thought Carlton Davis was underappreciated and just kind of the perfect fit last year. And Reed might be better. And I feel kind of crazy saying that. And you know, you maybe are a little concerned about the frame and how it holds up against the run, but he certainly doesn't give a damn. I mean, he just throws his body in there. He's aggressive against the run, which fits this culture, but the man coverage aspect of it is tip top. I mean, it's really been great. And I know it's such a cliche, the whole iron sharpens iron thing that you hear every training camp and probably every spring training and probably NHL off season. Like it's a thing though, right? Like these guys, the best get sharpened by the best, and he's going against St. Brown and JMO, two very different types of receivers that possess elite skill sets. And I had this conversation with DJ that I'm open to, you know, churn out for a story later, but just the different things he has to watch when he's lined up across from JMO, the different shoulder, the different hip points and he's holding his own. Yeah. St. Brown gets him sometimes and JMO gets him sometimes, but like in terms of win rate for what you expect for a cornerback, Reed is killing it. And I thought I had a very good practice today against the Dolphins, mind you, Tyreek-less Dolphins, but I think people aren't appreciating that signing and what it could mean to the Lions defense this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've seen DJ Reed match strides with JMO more often than not in one-on-ones. And we saw him in their first scrimmage maybe 2 weeks ago chase down Jahmyr Gibbs when Jahmyr Gibbs had nothing but the end zone in front of him. He like bounced outside to the left edge and it looked like a sure touchdown. And DJ Reed basically ran a 40-yard dash at a faster rate than Jahmyr Gibbs did and tackled him out of bounds. And they were all watching the play on film the next day, and all of Reed's teammates were like, bro, what was your 40? And he told them he ran a 4.5 on a sprained MCL at his combine, but I guess he has been clocked at a 4.3 before. And they were all like, oh, yeah, dude, you definitely run a 4.3. And he was like, yeah, well, tell Madden, because they got my speed at a 90, which is abysmal. But, you know, I think there was a misconception about Reed when he signed here that he was, and I was guilty of this myself at first blush, that he was the beneficiary of playing across from Sauce and therefore never had to guard number one receivers and therefore was untested as a number one corner. But that really wasn't how the Jets deployed their defense. And Reed will tell you this. They never asked Sauce to travel. So Reed just held down the right side and Gardner held down the left. And Reed more often than not actually played the bigger part of the field in the red zone. And so over last season alone, like he guarded against the Bengals, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, whoever happened to be on his side, against the Dolphins, Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, whoever happened to be on his side. He'd covered Cortland Sutton against the Broncos. He covered DK Metcalf against the Seahawks. And most notably, he covered Justin Jefferson against the Vikings. And Jefferson, for the record, had a pretty paltry day that day against DJ Reed. So he'll let you know, like, I've guarded the best receivers in the game. And he says it's not so much about proving that I can do it to everyone else. It's just, he calls it a curiosity to see how far I can take it. And I think he's finally in an environment now after toiling on losing teams for the last three seasons to take his game to an even higher level and to kind of broadcast his game to more people. The size isn't ideal compared to someone like Carlton, but the speed and the feistiness and the stickiness has been really clear. And I thought, on top of all the great reps he's had in coverage, maybe the play that I've seen in camp that most marked him as a Detroit Lions cornerback was again in that scrimmage on a handoff to Gibbs down near the goal line, where DJ Reed crashed in on run support and took down Gibbs and prevented a touchdown maybe 2 yards from the end zone. I mean, like, wrapped him up and stopped him in his tracks. And I think I might have been watching the play with you, Colton, and I was like, yeah, that's a Lions cornerback. That's exactly the kind of play you have to be willing and excited to make to play every down for this defense. And I think between his speed and his physicality, despite his frame, he's going to look darn good playing across from Terrion this year.
I think you knew that he was kind of a perfect fit for this Lions culture when he, you know, talked to us at his signing press conference, and you know, people noticed his tattoo, fifth round, whatever his draft slot was. You see that on his arm, and you ask him about it, he goes, yeah, I carry that with me every day. And you're like, that's a Lion if I've ever seen one. And you watch him out there in practice, and he's hitting like a linebacker. He's sticking in coverage. And like, yeah, I think he might go a little bit underrated. I think he's probably one of the most underrated corners in the game right now. I don't think that's a stretch to say, just based on his production, maybe the lack of buzz because of Sauce or whatever combination you want to put out there. But when I watch him play, I think he's going to be great for this team. Yeah. I was listening to Brad Holmes' interview with Kevin Clark on his podcast, This Is Football. And one thing Brad mentioned, he's like, you know, felt like we didn't get a lot of attention for our free agency period. And I'm like, hey, I went out and spent $16 million on DJ Reed. That's not nothing. That's not chump change, right? Like, this is a really good player that we're adding to our defense. And if he weren't here right now, you know, they weren't able to bring back Carlton Davis. His price tag was probably a little higher than they wanted to go. If they didn't sign DJ, you're probably going to the, you know, second, third tier of corners. Then, you know, maybe counting on Ennis a little bit more. He gets hurt. He's out for the season. So, like, I think the fact that they have DJ Reed on the roster right now, it's going to help them tremendously just to know that you have that peace of mind on the outside while Terrion is still developing. And by the way, I think he's going to be great for Terrion's development, because everything you hear about DJ is that he's a creature of habit, a gym rat, all these cliches, but I think he shows it with his work ethic every single day. And that can't help but rub off on guys like Terrion, the young guys in that room that are still kind of learning their way in this league. I think he's going to be so, so crucial for this group. And that's something reporters out in New York have kind of told me, hey, we're going to love DJ post game, what he does, what he brings to the locker room. Like, he's going to be a great fit here in Detroit.
Time to throw Brad under the bus, Colton. This man with his grievances against, like, it's like the players on Twitter that they're like, oh, everybody's talking bad about me. It's like, no, the fans are listening to it, talking about it. Like, Brad takes these national opinions, or lack of them in this case, and then just we get the brunt of it. And I'm pretty sure everybody here universally praised the rapid move, the pivot from Carlton Davis to DJ Reed. I think the numbers bear it out that they found a very adequate replacement. I don't think The Athletic or 97.1 of the Detroit Football Network did not credit Brett Holmes for a pretty savvy move, but those that maybe he's not getting those publications delivered to his office.
Yeah, I mean, Holmes said himself, he went into his wallet and took $16 million of his own money.
What's that old viral tweet? But I was told Steph Curry wasn't a shooter. It's like, nobody said that.
Yeah. One more thought on Reed, just to wrap this point. You know, he's extremely cerebral. We talk a lot about his physical attributes, but he's as intelligent a player as there is on this team. And when you ask him to describe his cover style, that's the first thing he says, is very smart and knowing exactly who I'm going up against, to build off your point, J-Raj. Like, he plays receivers differently depending on what they do best. And, he has such a savvy about him where, you watch him in his reps against J-Mo. He knows exactly when J-Mo's going to go from 0 to 100 based on the way he might have a shoulder angled or the way he's stepping into a route. And that's something that only comes with time and something that he can certainly pass on to Terrion. He talks about winning all three phases of the route and says, to beat me, it's going to take a damn near perfect ball and a damn near perfect catch every time. A lot of corners say that. Almost every corner says that. I think so far Reed has proven that to be true.
I love how different their personalities are too. Yeah. I mean, like, they're out there to achieve the same goal and often do, but I mean, you hear Terry on every play, whether he's making it or not. And I really think about it. Like, I don't know if I've heard DJ or seen DJ celebrate in a that kind of way on the field. You certainly hear his confidence in the interviews and talking to him one-on-one, like brimming with it, but it just doesn't show up in that same bombastic way.
Yeah. There was a play today. It was like Tua launched a deep ball to somebody downfield. I couldn't see who it was. And DJ was kind of there, almost tracked it, but wasn't able to come down. It was a little overthrown. And Terrion, who didn't, he was limited in practice. He wasn't even out there for team stuff. He goes, "Oh, man, you got to catch that, man." DJ's like, "What do you want me to do?" So their dynamic is hilarious. I really do think they're going to be good.
Like, Terrion, you had no picks last year.
Zero interceptions.
You're going to tell me I got to pick that.
Yeah. you talk, DJ Reed, it's crazy. I mean, Brad Holmes, another contract masterclass. He's like the top 20 paid corner AAV. And he's definitely not top. He's higher than top 20 corner. He's probably like a top 12, 15 corner. He might play better than that. I think I do want to bring this up because, you know, we got about 12 minutes and it'd be disappointing if I just didn't bring up another backup quarterback conversation. I mean, it's just so important, of course, because the fan base is all over it. And last week, by the way, just want to address this too. Maurice Norris, thank God he's okay. Yeah. That was the big, obviously, storyline in that game. And Dan Campbell talked about it. So he is back. That is great news. He's in concussion protocol. But the quarterback battle was the storyline of that game. Hendon started it. I'm over here. I got my popcorn. You know, we're doing a watch party. I'm fired up, dude. And I'm like, all right, let's see this thing. All right, let's see it. It's like balls in your court, Hendon Hooker. And then he puts two on the ground.
Balls on the ground. Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, yeah, that's tough. And not only that, it was almost like poetic how Kyle Allen just dusts off the pads, comes out and just slings the ball around like we're playing like backyard football. And he had like a damn near perfect passer rating. What do you guys think of, because a lot of people, I hear fans now, are already like, hey, it's over. He might not even make the roster. Hendon Hooker's, you know, he's going to get cut, yada, yada, yada. He'll probably be a practice squad guy. Is this door for Hendon Hooker, and you guys were there today, so you could speak on it, is this door closed, cracked? Is it still open? What are we doing with this backup quarterback thing?
I'm not going first on this, but I need to question, Jeff, you had a watch party for preseason 2? Did I hear that right?
That's so diabolical, man.
I am a sicko.
How many people were at this, and who was? I need names.
So we go live.
To send you all to witness protection.
I will say this: the first preseason game, the Lions got blown out, and we didn't end the stream until the clock hit zero. So I am a sicko.
All right.
For the love of the game.
For the love
somebody
of the
pick
game.
Up the
plus in Jeff's defense, he sat here last week and heard all three of us hype up how well Hendon had played in practice. He's like, man, I gotta see this with my own eyes. I have to see this. I saw game one. J-Rod just told
it's the group text.
Falling in Allen Park.
Yeah.
You liars.
Fellas, I'm going into the show arguing with my co-host. I'm going, you don't know the information I was told. All right. I know information. All right. And then the game on Saturday, I'm like, well, new information, obviously, with the game. But Kyle Allen's job to lose at this point, right? Is this how it is right now?
I would say Dan Campbell has made that pretty clear. And to answer your original question, the door is open still for Hooker, because if they close it and cut him, it'll be reopened by another team. And I just don't see Brad Holmes 2 years after drafting him in the third round cutting him loose. But when Campbell was asked this week about the QB2 situation, whether he's concerned or whether he considers it an issue, he said, no. I mean, I love the way Kyle Allen played, and I'll give Allen credit here. I thought again, he outplayed Hooker today and in the fewer reps the second team offense got. And he was a guy that I dismissed as just kind of a training camp placeholder when he got here, but more and more he's been the more impressive QB of the two, and you can see he just has the experience to operate a complex offense like Detroit's more smoothly than Hendon does. And Hendon has made strides in that regard, but Allen right now is QB2 for this offense. I don't think that can be disputed.
Yeah, I mean, when you're watching that game, and again, like we talked about Hendon and how he's looked in practice at least early on, but like, you know, you have to carry that over. You can't just look good for 3-4 days and expect to like win a job. That's not how this works. Like, there's going to be moments and highs and lows in training camp in these games. And even though I would venture to guess the Lions coaching staff, you know, pays more attention to the practices than these preseason games, you still have to show up at some point. And when you're putting the ball on the ground twice, and you know, protection, you can say what it is, what it is. But I would say as a quarterback, you got to be aware of things and you got to hold on to it. And your number one job is to not turn the ball over. And he did that twice. And Dan was very honest with us, and he was just like, we took him out because he was fumbling. Like, that was basically what he said.
Yeah.
And when you can't stick on the field like that, like, yeah, you're going to get yanked. And Kyle went in there and did his job. And, you know, one thing you can't argue with, you can argue upside, you know, who's going to be the guy, all that stuff. But when you look at Kyle Allen out there, the offense, even when he threw two interceptions, looked more efficient than at any point that Hendon has been in there this preseason. They're moving the ball. He's hitting guys in stride. Not high, not inaccurate. His footwork is sound for the most part, especially in that second game. I think that was more reflective of the Kyle Allen we've seen in practice, not the first game against the Chargers. So when you got a veteran there that has, you know, meaning, tangible NFL starts and experience, when you have that on your side, you know, it's easy to kind of navigate to that instead of waiting on a project like Hendon Hooker. And at this point, Hendon's 27. He's hasn't shown much improvement in these preseason games. Like, you do, I think it's fair to kind of question, like, what's the future look like for him? And if the Lions are only going to go with two quarterbacks right now, the season ended today, it has to be Kyle Allen. That said, there's a lot of time before this thing wraps up. And so the door is still open, but Hennon's got to kick it open at this point. It's kind of
well said.
Just barely cracked at this point. But, if he makes it, I would say that's more – if he makes it and he continues to play the way he's been playing, I almost think that's – coming from the front office and saying, hey, we're not going to cut this former third round pick just yet. Because the coaching staff is kind of telling you where they're leaning with their comments. And Kyle runs the offense much more efficiently than Hendon has.
I've been accused of doing the, other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln, with these guys. And, you know, did it a little bit with Kyle Allen in the first preseason game. Cause the first interception in particular was brutal, but I thought
bad throw.
Managed the offense pretty well outside of that. I'm not even blaming him for the second interception. In this game, you know, I went back and I really kind of processed everything with Hendon, and the fumbles are what they are. There's no excuse for him. Not going to try to make excuses for him. I understood why he felt compelled to run on the first one. I understand that his right tackle was destroyed on the second one, but it doesn't matter. You have to hold on to the football. But I thought it was a pretty big improvement in terms of processing, accuracy. Went 7-10, should have been 9-10, to be honest. Tesla tripped on the coming out of his route, should have been a completion there. The other one, obviously, Jackson Meeks dropped very early. And so I didn't feel, watching that a second time, that Hendon was as bad as it seemed, but again, it's two turnovers. It is what it is. I am questioning for the first time this week on whether the Lions will keep three quarterbacks. And I don't love that strategy in this league. I don't think it's a great one, but if you are going to be a meritocracy, and I think the Lions have done a really good job of upholding that standard under Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, at this stage, Kyle Allen has won the job. There's time, you know, I'd like you mentioned, Colton, the practice tape is more equal, but if you factor in and wait a little bit extra the games, Kyle Allen has won the job. I don't think they're ready to give up on Hendon yet. I don't think that if they cut him, he's making it back to the practice squad. I think there's going to be some team that's not expecting to be very good, whether it's a Cleveland Browns, like they need another quarterback, but somebody like them that will claim Hendon and, you know, think they can fix him or get more out of him. I think there's still value in having a cheap dual threat back up with some upside, whether he's 42 years old or not, there's still some upside there. And so I think there is more of a possibility they keep three now than I thought, you know, certainly to start camp. You know, I just don't think you give up quite yet on Hendon when you have another two full seasons of control. And at a just an absolute bargain price where it's really hard to find that in this league. Well, and you know what we saw today, by the way, what a bad backup situation. Zach Wilson is garbage. I'm just going to put it out terrible there. I just garbage. I saw one of the worst throws I've ever seen in that just sailing a 10 yard pass, like 8 yards over his wide open receiver's head. Like, it can be worse, folks. I promise you it could be worse.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see this comment. Mark Royal says, you heard that, Jeff, about the Hendon Hooker thing? Like, listen, all right, I think I can explain this whole thing. I'm a loyal person, all right? And I think this Hendon Hooker, you know, I'm slowly folding like a cheap lawn chair. I think I've got to a point where I'm like, all right, I think it's time where I can let go. You know, if you love something, it's like saying you let go a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think with the information we have, I agree with you, Justin, that I think, and you guys, other Will and Colton, you both kind of mentioned this too. Like, I don't think he would make it back to the roster if they were to cut him. But Kyle Allen, I apologize for even suggesting last week, because I kind of disrespected him a little bit, not completely, but I mentioned
you fueled him.
I kind of did. I mean, on last week's show, I'm like, you know, we already know what this guy is. You know,
I said the same thing, bro. I'm with you.
Yeah, and then he comes out. He looks like, he looks like Matthew Stafford out there. So, respect to Kyle Allen, man.
That's the funny thing is, like, that's what you want in a backup quarterback. You want to know who he is.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you just – can you carry the offense just enough across the finish line? And I think we kind of knew Kyle Allen was that guy. You just – you know, Hendon can be a little bit more than that guy if it comes together.
Yeah,
and not for nothing, you also want a quarterback that doesn't threaten Jared Goff, who at times can need affirmation. And if there is a quarterback beneath him that is viewed as any sort of potential successor or usurper, you just wonder the effect that it might have on him. But I think the crux of the QB2 debate isn't, oh, what do they do if Goff's done for the year? No, it's what do they do if Goff has to miss a half, or if Goff has to miss a game and a half or two games? Like, is the guy behind him equipped to operate the offense without turning the ball over and leaning on what should be, again, a really good run game and obviously weapons galore? And right now, Allen is clearly more equipped to do that than Hendon Hooker. Now, that, again, could change, but there isn't really much of a conversation to be had other than, do they keep three quarterbacks to keep Hendon Hooker? Hey, before we go, can I run through, maybe you guys can jump in here too, just a couple of my favorite things that I saw today that were maybe beyond the realm of football, kind of the extracurriculars.
Sure.
So there was a play during 11-on-11s where Jack Jones, the corner, who had, this is maybe like the one good play he had all game. He came
poor Jack Jones.
He came unblocked off of the right edge and took down Craig Reynolds for like an easy TFL, and got up and started hyping about it and yapping about it and running his mouth. And Scotty Montgomery comes down and he's like, man, you're in the AFL. You are supposed to make that tackle. Get your ass out of here. and Jack Jones just wandered back to Miami sideline. There was also a scrum in the back of the end zone, again involving Jack Jones after the Lions' fourth straight touchdown on a red zone rep. And Tesla, as he already is known to do, had like a really long physical extended block on Jones. So Jones ended up popping his helmet off and it eventually came face to face with Ratledge, which is when the entire scrum ended. St. Brown, who goes back with Jones to like their California high school days, saw him like nose to nose barking at Tate, stepped in and just kind of quietly guided him away. And when Decker was asked about a post game or after practice, he was like, yeah, I mean, it's a defensive back. You can get choke slammed if you want to. And then lastly, shout out to Sherman, who is the yellow lab and in his eighth season, the bomb sniffer for the Lions at training camp, who had like a serious Achilles injury this offseason to the point that he's wearing like a what looks like an offensive lineman's ACL brace on one of his back legs, and he's still out here doing his damn job. And he ended up after practice today sitting down on a big pile of ice next to Grant Stewart, who is in the ice bath time. Himself. And I was like, these two dudes are dogs who deserve it. But shout out Sherman, 8 years of loyal, dependable service. The second longest tenured Lion behind Taylor Decker.
I mean, there is just grit littered all over Allen Park. You know, like, including you three. All right, you were there. You got a lot of grit over there. I'll be there tomorrow. So, Justin, I promise I will say hi to the fellas.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to ignore you. Justin's like, turn to the tables.
Who is this guy? No, another great episode. Appreciate you all.